Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And welcome to the month of June. We begin with some selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living, and the theme this month is In Living Color. The daily guides are written by Reverend Raymond Anderson, Ph.D. Be uniquely you. Stand out. Shine. Be colorful. The world needs your prismatic soul. Anne Lee Mercury. June's inspiration is sparked by everything in Dr. Ray's eclectic background and his commitment to what he calls Science of Mind and Spirit 4.0. His experiences of trauma once caused so much pain that he couldn't perceive the vibrantly bold, technicolor richness of life. This month, he invites us to ask not just what it means to live in color, but also how do we live in living color? The call to live a colorful life is possibly more urgent now than ever. Reverend Raymond Anderson, Ph.D., is a true Imagineer who brings years of experience and wisdom as a professional educator, visual artist, performer, ASL interpreter, author, and lover of comics and film to all areas of his life and his ministry, which for him extends beyond the church or center. He is an ordained Centers for Spiritual Living minister and serves as the founding minister and spiritual director of the Center for Spirituality Integrated Arts, a CSL teaching center. He is a frequently sought-after guest minister, speaker, and workshop facilitator. He briefly served as the co-lead and the interfaith lead for his local Moms Demand Action chapter. As a survivor of gun violence, he also participated in the Everytown Survivor Fellowship Program. Connect with him at RaymondAnderson.com. I see your true colors. Give a kid a box of crayons and watch him color the world happy. Tell him where to fill in which color and watch him dislike everything colorful. Nitya Prakash. And so we suffer, not because suffering is imposed on us, but because we are ignorant of our true nature. Ernest Holmes, The Science of Mind, page 37.1. I think Holmes would agree there are times when people impose suffering, abuse, and trauma on others. Simply avoiding being a cause of anyone's suffering is not enough. We need to help them heal it. For years, as a result of the many traumas I experienced from as far back as I can remember, I hated myself and nearly everything about my life. I suffered daily from the intrusive thoughts of suicidal ideations until one day it dawned on me that I had become the tormentor and bringer of suffering. I had adopted the belief that if I did it to myself first, others couldn't do it to me. That shifted one day when I was hired to interpret an event where a vocalist would be singing True Colors. While on stage, interpreting the line, "So don't be afraid to let them show your true colors. True colors are beautiful like a rainbow," I had a life-changing breakthrough. It started when I saw various people, including the deaf audience members, brought to tears. I felt myself holding back tears. Why was I about to cry? It dawned on me at that moment I was using the tools of my abusers and bullies against myself. I had been conditioned to stifle my own true colors, to refuse them the freedom to be seen by anyone, especially myself. As individualizations of spirit, we are beautiful, colorful beings meant to thrive. Today we recognize this truth as we inspire others to do so as well. Affirmation. I acknowledge and celebrate my true colors. As I share them with the world, they heal and inspire others to do the same until the collective consciousness is colorfully whole. Heal and reveal. What blooms from beautiful seeds of thought becomes a symphony of colorful abundance. Jazz Phelan. We are individuals. To be an individual must always be to have the right of self-choice. God, spirit, the universe could not make a mechanical individual. And since God could not make us so we had to go to one way, God had to make us and let us go the way we saw fit. Ernest Holmes, Love and Law, page 8.3. Do we want to create a world that works for all? Do we want each statement of CSL's global vision to be a reality? If so, we must individually and collectively cultivate a consciousness that can hold a both and One where we recognize a problem or limitation for what it is, while also knowing that the limitless possibilities and potentialities of the universe are present in all we do. A surgeon sees what a patient experiences while also working toward a solution. As metaphysicians, we have the same call. Holmes said, "I believe everything is as real as it is supposed to be. If a person hurts, they hurt. If they feel bad, they cry. There is want, lack, and apparent limitation in human experience, and there is no use denying it. But perhaps it doesn't need to be. Perhaps it is not intended to be." By this, he means the same as what a surgeon means, that we must address people's needs while maintaining a PPI, possibility, probability, inevitability, mental equivalent. Countless people are in desperate need of the bare necessities to exist and live. To them, thriving is a mere dream. We should heed S. Kelly Harrell, who says, "We don't heal in isolation, but in community." And Elphaba in Wicked, when she sings, "Think of what we could do together, unlimited, together we're unlimited." We cannot effectively heal the world by focusing solely on its problems, or worse yet, ignoring them. We must be brave and face it all in order to heal it all. Affirmation. I am a healer and revealer of the colorful abundance of the universe as it expresses itself as health and wellness in every area of my life. And from the same issue, we turn to Eugene Holden's monthly personal affirmations in living color. The channel of greatness. Life is filled with colorful experiences. We create the experiences in our individual lives by the thoughts we keep. For you to be great, keep thoughts of greatness. Believe you are great at what you do. You can affirm something like this. I am great at everything I do. I am a great person. I am the channel through which God is great as me. Amazing. Let's face it, you are amazing. You can't help it. The same intelligence that causes the sun to shine reveals itself as you. Whatever you want to do, believe you can. Then get busy doing what is needed. I am the vessel through which the infinite reveals itself. I am amazing in every aspect of my life. All that I do represents the all good of God, of Spirit, of the universe. Now is the time. It is never too late to write that book, sing that song, or ask for that date. Now is the time to reveal your greatness. It is never too late. Now is the time to live your best life ever. I now accept my greatness. I accept my amazing life. I live my life in abundant joy. Now is the time to show my true self. Freedom. Believe it or not, it is our thinking that keeps us in bondage, and our thinking also sets us free. Remember, there is a power for good within you that seeks expression as you. For that to happen, free your mind. I am free of the thoughts of fear. I focus on love, peace, abundance, and freedom. I am the free expression of the divine, and so it is. And we turn to the Daily Word for June's monthly affirmations. Inner peace. My thoughts are anchored in divine peace. Wisdom. The discerning power of divine wisdom is my inner resource. Faith. In faith, I am free. Prosperity. Freely I give, and graciously I receive. World order. Holding my thoughts in order, I serve the world. Zeal. Divine zeal is my impulse to accomplish great things. Toward the end of his long life, Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore famously wrote, "I fairly sizzle with zeal and enthusiasm and spring forth with a mighty faith to do the things that ought to be done by me." This story shows me that as a divine gift, zeal is always mine to call upon, no matter my age or the state of my life. It is the impulse that makes me eager to rise in the morning and gives me energy to get started on the day's tasks. It drives me to give the best of myself to those people and things I care about most. Zeal is quickening, enlivening energy that helps me feel the presence of God, of Spirit, of the universe within, and bring that presence to life in a way that only I can. I sizzle with zeal. With passion and enthusiasm, I live, love, and serve. Love. Love flows to me and through me. Love is the name and nature of God, of Spirit, of the universe, and a wonderful aspect of my divine inheritance. God is love, and I am loved by and through that love. I can trace all of my loving impulses to the divine within. In fact, I feel most alive when I generously share the love that lives in my heart. I feel grateful there are so many ways to do this. I can demonstrate compassion for a stranger, recognizing and honoring their sacred worth. I can cultivate love through other acts of kindness. Even a simple smile and warm greeting can brighten someone's day and let them know they matter. Each time I make a heartfelt connection, I am bringing the love of God, of Spirit, of the universe into the world. When I love, I am manifesting the kingdom of heaven right here on earth. And from this same issue, we turn to an article by Reverend Thomas W. Shepherd, D. Minister, Chasing Grace, Bibles, and Wedding Bells. I was chasing the meaning of divine grace the summer of 1976 because grace had brought me back to uniform service. I was an old soldier, but a new Army chaplain, a Vietnam veteran returning to active duty in my early 30s. I was downright fatherly to teenage soldiers who comprised my flock at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Dozens of clergy served with me, mostly Protestants, a handful of Catholic priests, and one rabbi. We were the last generation before Muslim and Buddhist chaplains extended our effectiveness with today's military. Chaplains counseled soldiers and families regardless of creed. I never said Catholic Mass or conducted Jewish Sabbath services, but troops often sought guidance from the closest clergy person available, their unit's chaplain. That was me. Catholic soldiers sometimes called me father. I never corrected them. Trainees zoomed through a crash course to turn civilian kids into soldiers. All were volunteers, eager to wear the uniform and see the world, especially since the Vietnam War had ended. Well, not everybody. Some crawled from bunks in the pre-dawn darkness and wanted to go home. In the U.S. military, Uncle Sam had their oath for 3 years, so they were going nowhere except to undergo progressively rigorous training. They craved an escape route without going AWOL and facing court-martials. Drill sergeants promptly lined up the malcontents and marched them to the unit chaplain, me. I had no power to abrogate their oath, but I wanted to offer ongoing support after meeting with me, maybe a pocket testament with Psalms. The problem? I had zero budget for spiritual literature. I recalled the American Bible Society provided free Bibles to institutional chaplains, so I wrote to ABS on military letterhead, stationery, and requested assistance. Time passed, and I figured my letter had fallen into the wishful thinking file. One Sunday afternoon, another lineup of soldiers waited outside my office. One by one, each man said almost word for word, "Sir, my girlfriend's pregnant, and I gotta get a discharge." After the 10th instant replay, I leaned out the door and asked, "How many of you guys want a discharge?" Every hand went up except one. I told them to stand fast, offered the others a prayer for divine grace, and invited them to return when the training schedule allowed. Michael, the soldier who didn't want a discharge, was from the American South. His girlfriend, Debbie, wasn't pregnant. Michael and Debbie had planned to marry. When he joined the Army, Debbie's parents told her to break it off. They didn't have the power to enforce the decree, but in a traditional Southern family, their opinion mattered. I wrote to Debbie's parents and told them Michael had come to the chaplain with his feelings. It was clear he deeply loved Debbie and was heartsick at the thought of losing her. I wondered whether they saw the same reaction in their daughter. With prayer for the family, I sent the letter. Now it, too, was left to divine grace. Response to my letter came swiftly. Debbie's parents relented, and 1 month later, Michael's battalion graduated from basic training. Wedding bells rang at the battalion chapel where I joined Michael and Debbie in holy matrimony. Relatives from both families traveled to attend. While the wedding party lingered for hugs, kisses, and photographs, the senior chaplain's assistant found me and said, "What did you do, Chaplain Shepherd? There's a moving van out back with umpteen boxes of Bibles for you." ABS had come through with 10,000 pocket testaments with Psalms, hundreds of full-size paperback Bibles, and hundreds of smaller editions in English and Spanish. I smiled at the second demonstration of divine grace in a single day. I learned that summer that chasing grace sometimes means ask and you will receive. Other times it means not now. Wait patiently, but you can always trust divine love. Reverend Thomas W. Shepherd, D. Min, Vietnam veteran, retired U.S. Army chaplain, and Unity Institute and seminary professor, has authored 5 books on religious topics. He lives in Tucson, Arizona. We return to Science of Mind for Carol Burbank's monthly column, Spirituality and Leadership, Tapping into True Imagination. True imagination is not fanciful daydreaming. It is fire from heaven. Ernest Holmes. This time of backlash and conflict in the United States penetrates deeply into every community and creates challenges for everyone. Our grounding in spiritual truths helps us weather uncertainty and oppression, offering hope in dark times. But these truths can also seem unrealistic or even dangerous in polarized times. Now is the time for leaders to spark creative solutions and open up the way of light. Connecting with true imagination means connecting with the divine stories we live from our core as leaders. Why stories? Because the human imagination spins stories as a substance of our transforming selves, and therefore the transforming world. These same stories, translated in our actions and plans, form the matrix that allow us to communicate our vision of community and the solutions that will bring us into alignment with the highest good. Great leaders build a bridge to the limitless world of the imagination, modeling its expansive wisdom as a gift for all people. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. shared his dream despite violence and repression, waking the conscience of a nation. But mobilizing the imagination can happen on a small scale as well, beginning with one creative leader at a time. The only real barrier to the imagination's deep conversation with God is our own fear and doubt. Strong leadership harnesses the stories from the vast dream of the divine to break free of that narrow and anxious perspective. The mythic world of the imagination gives us vision and empowers us on every level. With discernment, we can navigate the sometimes overwhelming images and lessons there, living that wisdom when we walk through the world. The first step to mastery is to build a meditation practice that liberates the true imagination. You might begin with something like traditional Zen breath work, teaching the body and mind to become calm and open. You can progress to exercises that open the heart and spirit to a kind of shamanic journey, using every creative tool at hand, including art, writing, active imagination, and prayer. Which creative tool best supports your journey to visionary leadership? Imagine the delight in store when you open the door to experience the fire from heaven. Carol Burbank, PhD, is a leadership and change specialist, as well as the president of Story Weaving Coaching and Consulting. Read more on her blog, Lead Me On, at choosethebetterstory.com. And from this same issue, an article by David Ault, Awakening to Pride, A Journey of Becoming. My journey toward understanding and self-acceptance as a gay person is not unique. I was born in an era when there was little or no positive representation, raised in a religious culture that condemned my developing feelings, and with an immediate family that viewed those feelings as immoral. Yet long before I could even comprehend what this perceived immorality was, I simply felt different, separate. I found nothing relatable in the Jack and Jill characters of primary readers or in the popular school crushes of my classmates. I loved being alone, outdoors, sometimes seeking refuge with neighborhood families or soothing ascetics where my yet undefined feelings seemed less strange. I have a vivid and bizarre memory of sitting on a seesaw with a classmate during recess and casually announcing that I didn't see myself living long enough to go to college. It wasn't said with sadness or dramatization, just a simple, matter-of-fact statement, delivered as casually as if I'd been saying, I can't wait to turn 10 so I can get a public library card. Looking back, I can't fathom where such a statement came from. Yet there was an innate, unshakable sense of being so different, so out of place, that in my young mind, being different inevitably led to extinction. At this stage, having any sense of pride in what I was feeling or in who I simply was felt incomprehensible. But as hormones surged and my critical thinking skills strengthened, my ability to maintain the strength to suppress feelings became increasingly difficult. There was no prideful angel on one shoulder whispering, "Someday it will all get better." Just a fearful sort of devil archetype, painting a hopeless future of covering up or scolding me. I continuously was taught that to engage in such desires or even to entertain them was a sin. If this is true, I thought, I must become even more rigorous in being good. Whether discussing the LGBTQIA+ experience or any other cultural, spiritual, racial, or gender identity journey, we all share a place on the human timeline with our unconscious limitation or dormant awareness, that state in which our perception is shaped and confined by environment, tradition, or inherent beliefs, without recognition of a more expansive perspective. At this point in my timeline, I was completely ignorant of any culture of acceptance or sense of pride in who I was. This parallels my experience in spiritual communities, where many people entered the centers where I served as senior minister with no understanding of the principle that God, Spirit, the universe, is not a separate entity, but the very essence of creation, infinite intelligence itself. Some, on hearing this message, felt an immediate kinship. Others tiptoed cautiously into such a radical departure from their upbringing, and some reacted with fervent cries of heresy, the same wide-ranging behavioral overlay we all experience when we reach a precipice of outgrowing a narrative or core belief. Deferred belonging. I graduated high school and left for college, defying that seesaw prophecy from elementary school. I endured 4 years at a major Christian university before moving to the Big Apple with 2 duffel bags and an ambition to become an actor. Surrounded by scores of others who shared my feelings, I still faced another hurdle on my path to acceptance and pride. More than anything, I wanted to be an actor, and at that time, success often hinged on making a difficult choice, whether to be open and accepting of myself as gay or hyper-discreet to preserve a reputation. I put blinders on, throwing myself into classes, auditions, agent solicitations, and the necessary part-time jobs to cover rent, training, and food. I quickly became an earnest and willing target for powerful and famous figures in the industry who wanted to help me, take me under their wing, and even date me, while emphatically filling my head with this advice. If I wanted a career beyond theater, I would have to remain closeted and keep my eye on the prize. This felt like phase 2 of pride, identity limbo. Now knowing there were those who had risen to a place of radical acceptance, celebrating who they were, even fighting and rebelling for the right to be seen. Yet for me, embracing my identity felt like a risk too great. To do so, I feared, would mean losing everything I worked for. Everything creatively exciting, everything that equated to rising out of the suffocating existence of my childhood. I could see pride in others, but under the weight of my ingrained fears and conditioning, I was too internally resistant to recognize the possibility of my own self-acceptance. I believed every promise, buried every devastation, and somehow clung to the hope that I still had a shot at a career predicated on maintaining the illusion of being straight. That era gave birth to a deep well of self-shaming. I was pursued, promised countless breakthrough opportunities, yet at 20-something, I was just one of many fresh-faced dreamers, seeking self-acceptance, unconditional love, and worth, all costumed in the vehicle of show business. By day, I'd be hanging wallpaper in an Upper East Side apartment, and by night, I'd be scrubbing dried glue and paint chips from my hair before racing to be the date of a director or manager at a cocktail party where he'd promised to introduce me to producers. I booked my first union speaking role in The Cotton Club, although my role was ultimately cut in the final edit. During the lengthy shoot, I begged the costumer to let me sneak out the tuxedo I wore in the film so I could be the arm candy of a powerful figure at a star-studded black tie event. I believed every promise, buried every devastation, and somehow clung to the hope that I still had a shot at a career predicated on maintaining the illusion of being straight. That path ultimately led me to Hollywood, where I secured auditions for major network pilots. And then, by providence, I had a reunion with an acquaintance from that Christian university I attended. That man, named Jerry, would become the catalyst for the next phase of my journey with pride. Jerry ran sound for a spiritual teacher whose weekly messages were a far cry from the rigid fundamentalism we both grew up with. She spoke of self-acceptance, of loving ourselves exactly as we are, of worth as an inherent truth rather than something to be earned. These messages directly challenged the long-standing thorn of suffering in my mind that told me, above all else, to be a good boy. That woman was Louise Hay, a licensed religious science minister and practitioner who had moved from New York to Los Angeles and had become a compassionate beacon of support for the growing number of gay men facing a terrifying, life-threatening illness called AIDS. I felt overwhelmed by the dynamics of it all, by her words, by the sheer energy in the room, by the increasing number of people who showed up each week, and yet I couldn't unhear her message. I was worthy. I was enough just as I am. I felt compelled to keep returning and listening to Louise. Jerry asked if I'd be willing to help him and his partner write songs and sing for Louise's gatherings. She wanted music that supported her message. I don't know what made me say yes. I was still nervous, now driving back and forth across the wide stretches of Los Angeles, settling into a West Coast variation of a familiar routine of part-time jobs, auditions, agent meetings, and continued warnings to guard my sexuality. But I felt something beginning to soften and shift. The unburdening. I began spending a lot of time around Louise. Our musical trio was a wish fulfilled for her, and as her notoriety grew, along with the unexpected success of You Can Heal Your Life, she expanded her appearances and work beyond Los Angeles and took us with her. Early on, Louise asked me about my own journey of self-acceptance. I still believed I could compartmentalize my justifications for remaining closeted to my family and those managing my career. She didn't shame me for my reasoning, but gently suggested that I practice coming out in the mirror as a way to become more willing to do so with others. Not more than 3 days into the mirror practice, my mother called to announce that she and my stepfather would be traveling across the U.S. and planned to stop in Los Angeles, a visit I could never have imagined happening in a million years. That simple mirror practice seemed to birth the logistics and the courage to finally come out to my mother. Accepting and loving myself, allowing my partnership with pride to evolve, was a gradual process. Setbacks and accelerations naturally occurred, but eventually I settled into overwhelming gratitude for this incarnated choice and identity as someone born gay. You might think that's the end of the journey, the ultimate arrival. But for me, something new has begun. I'm navigating what lies beyond labels and identities, beyond male, gay, minister, elder, former this, current that. I am drawn to what exists beyond the need to cultivate being somebody and toward a fresh intent of dissolving into the vast, indefinable truth that I am, in essence, something much more beyond this skin suit and these labels. At times, it seems I've returned full circle to those early feelings of impending extinction. Yet now, it isn't about literal death per se. Rather, it is a form of dying to continuous attachments that feel the need to preserve identity. Ironically, this transcends the ignorance of, resistance toward, and even arrival at the celebratory banquet of my journey with pride. Another fresh beginning, an ever-evolving travelogue through the infinite layers of awareness on our shared path toward walking each other home. And there's a little side note about Louise's book. Her best-selling book, You Can Heal Your Life, has touched and transformed countless lives and introduced many to the science of mind teaching. Hay passed away in 2017 in San Diego, California, at the age of 90. And I can tell you, I still use that book regularly to help me answer questions. We now pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcastinfo/on-demand. We return now to the Great Awakening, our prophesized transformation and the attainment of embodied enlightenment by Mike Dooley in conversation with six renowned channels. And we had started Chapter 6, the Self-Realization Toolkit, Everything You Need to Raise Your Vibration, with Daryl Anka. And for 40 years, people from all over the globe have made the journey to experience renowned channel Daryl Anka as he brings through a remarkable being from the future known as Bashar. Mishar is a physical ET who shares some of the most riveting, insightful, piercing ideas that clearly explain in detail how the universe works and how each person creates the reality they experience. He gives audiences the information necessary to apply these teachings so that they work to change their lives and create the reality they desire. In addition to channeling Bashar, Daryl expresses his creative talents in the forms of writing, directing, and producing films through his own production company, Zia Films. And we pick up with the section on the seven basic needs of physical life. This leads us to the second part, which we call the seven basic needs of physical life. And the first part was about the five universal laws. You exist, everything is here and now. The one is the all, and the all are the one. What you put out is what you get back, and everything changes except the laws. These ideas are being described so that you can understand another difference, the difference between what you often say you want in life and what you actually need in life. Sometimes your wants and your needs coincide. Other times they do not. Specifically, often what you want is not what you need. What you truly need will fulfill you and allow you to feel fulfilled, to feel joy, to feel an ease of being, and to thrive in physical reality. This is not as true concerning what you want. So it's important to learn the difference between what you want and what the seven basic needs of physical life actually are. These will allow you to thrive as a physical being. Without them, you will start to waste away and not be able to perpetuate your physical experience. That's what makes them truly the things you need in order to thrive in physical reality. We order them based on the severity of your need for each. Again, while this may start out very simplistically, please understand how important they are for you as physical beings having a life on Earth, especially paying close attention to the less expected final points. The seven basic needs of physical life. Your usually obvious needs. 1. Air. 2. Water. 3. Sleep. 4. Food. Your less obvious needs. 5. Shelter. 6. Connection. 7. Creativity. Your usually obvious needs. Now, we know there are certain people who practice certain disciplines, such as breatharians, who may seem to get along fine without some of our listed needs for a while, but these are the exceptions. What we are talking about in this list is what the average human does and doesn't need to perpetuate your life. Air. The first basic need, of course, is air. You need to breathe in order to continue to live. Without breathing, without air, you'll probably die within minutes. Water. You need water. This keeps you fluid and lubricated, literally. You need it to thrive in physical reality. Without it, you will probably die within days. Sleep. Most people would think that the third thing is food, but it's not. It's actually sleep, dreaming in particular. If you don't sleep and connect to spirit through your dreams, you'll start hallucinating within 10 to 11 days, and your physical systems will start to break down. You'd go psychotic and likely die within 2 weeks without this connection you usually make each night. Remember, physical reality isn't what you think it is. It's energy, a projection of consciousness. You are spiritual beings who never leave spirit. You're in spirit right now. All of you exist within spirit. In your waking hours, you actually dream that you've left spirit to be human. So, right now, as you pretend that you're not spirit, having a physical experience requires, this will change in time, that you recharge your batteries to continue projecting the idea that you're a physical being. Your physical lives are illusions, projections that require energy to keep up the illusion that you're just a physical being. So you must sleep and dream to keep the physical reality going, to play out your time and space for as long as you've decided to do so. Food. Number 4 is food. In some way, shape, or form, most of you on the planet also need sustenance to allow your body to thrive. If you get air, water, sleep, and food, you will begin to thrive. Your less obvious needs. The concept of needs shifts a little bit in the last 3 requirements. Shelter. You all need some form of shelter or environment that is conducive to life. That doesn't mean it has to be a physical house. There are places on your planet, at least for right now, where the environment itself is very pleasurable and very conducive to the thriving of human life. Some people call it tropical islands or refer to it as paradise on Earth, where many people can live outdoors without a shelter or with a very simple shelter to protect them from certain elements. Normally, however, without shelter or a conducive environment, your body can wear down and you could die. Maybe not right away, but your spirit, in a sense, may also start to diminish when you're feeling stressed out and struggling through life if you're not in an environment that allows your body, spirit, and mind to move forward without having to worry about every little thing, like lightning, floods, earthquakes, and so on. Connection. Everyone needs connection, a relationship to something or someone. It doesn't even have to be a person. It could be a connection to the cosmos, an animal, the world, a tree, or even a rock. You need a relationship that allows you to feel that you're part of a community or larger group, or gives you a communications ability in a relationship with one or many. This idea of belonging is also important for you to thrive in physical reality, as well as other levels of reality. Creativity. The final need is a creative expression of your true self. In other words, the living of your purpose, your mission, to be you. And that dovetails into the next segment, because the idea of expressing the creative essence of your true self as a giving, serving being means very specifically one thing: acting on your passions in life, living your dreams, being who you truly know you are in your core, in your heart of hearts, and being willing to act on those things. These final two, connection and creativity, differ a bit from the first five. Going without either or both doesn't mean you'll die right away or even quickly at all, but their absence can cause your mind, psychology, and spirit to diminish over time, perhaps even leading to suicidal thoughts, which will take you out of physical reality if you act on them. Life's Instruction Manual, the 5-Step Formula. Now, you have the 7 basic needs, and if you live or have them, you'll be prepared for fulfillment in every level of your life by simply following the formula we're about to share. We're about to walk you through the way reality works, describing the actual tools and mechanisms that allow you to create your reality in the way that you prefer, in the way that aligns with who you truly are, to experience the best life possible in the most joyful, creative, passionate, exciting, loving, and connected way possible. This is not a philosophy. This is a distillation of the mechanisms through which you actually create your physical reality experience. We're literally going to give you an instruction manual, in much the same way that you would receive an instruction manual for how to operate a piece of machinery. If you simply follow the basic instructions step by step, your machine will operate in the way it was designed to your advantage. If you don't follow the instructions, well, then the machine may not operate as ideally as it could, and you may, in fact, injure yourself. This is how you create your physical reality, whether you know it consciously or not. Allow yourself to pay attention and absorb this. We guarantee that if you follow our steps, your life will improve. This is how reality was created and meant to be lived by you and for you. Life's Instruction Manual, the 5-Step Formula. 1. Follow your passion. 2. Act on your passion to the best of your ability. 3. Have zero insistence on the outcome. 4. Stay in a positive state. 5. Investigate your belief systems. Follow your passion. Again, this section, Follow Your Passion, dovetails from the 7th basic need, creativity. Why is this important? You hear this all the time in your reality. Follow your bliss, your passion, your excitement. But why? Why is that so important? Allow us to explain. You have, as a being, a physical mind, but you also have a non-physical higher mind. And it's your non-physical higher mind that's meant to guide you through this life. How does it do that? It speaks an energy language. It gives you energetic messages. How do you interpret those energy messages? How do you know when the higher mind is sending you those energy messages? Easy. Your physical body translates those energy messages into the sensations of passion, excitement, creativity, curiosity, attraction, and love. That's how you know you're receiving something from the higher mind. You feel it in your body. These feelings tell you that this situation, this circumstance, this thing, this project, this idea, or this concept is something that aligns with who you really are, with your core frequency, experienced as your passion, excitement, creativity, love, and connection. Your frequency is who you are. It's your vibration, your signature as a unique being, a unique reflection of all that is and of existence itself. Act on your passion to the best of your ability. When you have such feelings about a circumstance, situation, person, or relationship, it's guidance from your higher mind saying, this is your next step. This is your path. Act on it the best way you can, taking it as far as you can. That's the second step, until you can take it no further. You'll be listening to the higher mind and its guidance. You'll be starting a dialogue with the higher mind and its guidance. And by acting on that passion, you're telling your higher mind, I heard you. I'm willing to listen. I'm open to it and receiving your guidance because you are guiding me through life in the best possible way. The language of the higher mind in physical reality isn't words, it's actions. So when you act, you're speaking back saying, yes, I heard you, and I'm willing to act on this passion because you're telling me that this is who I am right now. Then continue onward, acting on your passion for as long as you can, taking it as far as you can, until you can take it no further or until your excitement wanes. There are two reasons why your excitement or passion may temporarily or permanently wane in the direction of the thing you're acting on. One, it's an opportunity to examine your belief systems to ensure there isn't a fear-based or negative belief causing the excitement to go away, perhaps because you're too afraid to move forward or you're worried that something bad will happen if you do. Two, if it's naturally going away, then it's synchronicity telling you to change course, that your next step may be something you haven't thought of yet, to look for something else that contains more excitement than anything else, and to move on that next, act on that next. Most paths are not necessarily straight lines. Yours may be a winding path that will actually be the shortest of all because it's the path of least resistance. We'll talk more about synchronicities shortly. For right now, the idea is to act on your passion, taking it as far as you can until you can take it no further, while ensuring you're not the one lessening it because you have fear-based beliefs about what it means to move forward. Have zero insistence on the outcome. Then the next part, and I understand that this is a great challenge for many, as you act on your passion, taking it as far as you can, you must have absolutely zero, and I mean zero, insistence or assumption on what the outcome should be or for what it will look like. The key to this is understanding that your physical mind is limited in its capacity to imagine what the ideal outcome actually is. Yet you all have powerful imaginations, and you can and should use them while dropping your insistence on outcomes. This is much easier said than it may first seem. Visualization is not necessarily a tool for the purpose of manifesting exactly what you imagine, although sometimes this happens. It's meant to create a representation or to serve as a kind of placeholder for the truly ideal outcome. What you imagine is to be a symbol for the purpose of getting you into the excitement you need to be in to actually give and receive guidance from the higher mind. It is to be emblematic of what the real outcome needs to be or what the next thing is that needs to happen that's good for your journey and positive for your path. So by dropping your idea of the outcome after you've used it to get really excited about the manifestation, that's when you open up. By staying excited, you create space for the higher mind to deliver what needs to happen next, what will serve you best. Then, no matter what shows up, stay in a positive state to keep the momentum going. That's the trick. That's the key. Stay in a positive state. Even if something manifests that you don't prefer, objectively speaking, not a judgment, recognize that whatever it is, it will still serve you if you stay in a positive state. Sometimes when you get really good at this, you'll even test yourself by manifesting something you don't prefer to see if you're going to react to it negatively in the same old way you used to. The true measure of change is not whether the outside world looks different. It's whether you respond to it differently, even when it looks the same. If you truly understand these principles, it wouldn't matter to you what happens next because you know it will serve you, even if it was created from a negative place. This doesn't mean that you'll start calling a negative thing a positive thing unto itself. What it means is you can recognize that even though something may have been created out of negative energy, you can still get a positive result from it if you remain in a positive energetic state. Remember, you can only experience what you are the vibration of. What you put out is what you get back. That's the law. It's just plain physics. The idea, then, is that by staying in a positive state, even when something manifests that you don't prefer, you'll be able to use it in a positive way. For example, seeing something that you don't prefer can give you a much clearer idea by contrast and comparison of what you do prefer, which is a positive way to use what you don't prefer. And as soon as you use it that way, it will disappear and the things that you do prefer can start coming in. Here's the big secret about the law of attraction. There's a misunderstanding that says you have to learn to create the frequency you're after. No. Those frequencies of passion, excitement, creativity, love, and connection are your natural state. These are your core vibrations, remember? They are designed to attract absolutely everything relevant in your life that will permit you to experience those qualities at all times. You're always sending out those vibrations. They're always attempting to attract everything you prefer and that you need for your own fulfillment. You don't have to learn to create those frequencies. It's about getting out of your own way, letting go of fear-based and negative beliefs that are interfering with your natural frequencies and your innate ability to attract what you need into your life. Investigate your belief systems. Focus on the idea of understanding your belief systems. Investigate your belief systems, finding the ones that don't work for you, are out of date, out of alignment, or probably belong to someone else. Growing up in life, you absorb the beliefs of those who cared for you, your parents, friends, school, society, telepathically and through body language, beliefs that simply had nothing to do with you or that sprung from their own unfulfilled wishes. But now that you've grown up, you can think for yourself. You can decide what's true for you. You can let go of the belief systems you may have gathered along the way that are out of alignment with your core vibration to allow your core frequencies to work in the most efficient way. Using Life's Instruction Manual. The main ideas of the instruction manual or formula are to act on your passion every moment that you can, to the best of your ability, to take it as far as you can until you can go no further, making sure you're not dampening the excitement with fear-based beliefs, and then look for the next thing that contains more excitement than any other option and act on that next. That's your path, and that's what your higher mind is telling you. Do this without any insistence or assumption on what the outcome should look like or be, when it should happen, or how it should happen. Open to the idea that your higher mind and synchronicity will bring you what's most ideal, your absolute best outcome. And then allow yourself to stay positive no matter what manifests so you can benefit from it and extract a positive experience. Even if a thing that manifests is something you don't prefer, use it in a positive way. Along the way, examine your belief systems. Investigate the ideas you're buying into as true for yourself in any given situation with honesty and willingness. Ask, why do I believe something bad may happen? Why have I picked up on a particular fear that is something might go wrong? Allow yourself to examine why it's there, what it is, and let it go by making it nonsensical. See your negative beliefs in a true and fair light. Compare yourself to other people in the world who might be doing things you would love to do. See them as representatives of what your own passion is capable of. When you can see others thriving, it's clearly an indication that you can too, at least in some way, shape, or form, if not identically to them. And see how the fact that they can do it and somehow it seems you can't is nonsensical. Understand that if it really was true that you couldn't do it, you would never even be able to see other people doing it. Now, that doesn't mean everyone can do every single thing that other people are doing. The idea is to be honest with yourself about what your dreams and passions truly are and what is relevant for you in your life. Relevance is the key here. Could I suddenly become a blue being that is 12 feet tall with 15 arms? Well, it is possible, but is it probable? Is it relevant? Not likely, given your path, your theme, and what you're exploring. It's not about what's possible or impossible. It's about what's probable or relevant for you. Be honest with yourself about what you truly need in life to be fulfilled by following what we have shared with you so far, and you will find that your life can be very simple, relatively speaking. You can gain the things you need very simply, and you can be absolutely ecstatic with the way it all unfolds. To repeat once again, act on your passion. Take it as far as you can. Allow yourself to determine why any enthusiasm has waned. Be honest with yourself. Stay in a positive state. Don't insist or assume what the outcome should be. Examine your belief systems so that you can let go of the ones that are no longer relevant, that are negative and fear-based, and be true to yourself about what's possible in your life. There are no more instructions. We could spend hours, and we have, in fact, we've spent years, going into the details of precisely how these instructions need to be applied in your reality. Precision is the key here. You cannot add other ideas or outdated belief systems to this formula and expect the formula to work as precisely as it can. We have given you the stripped-down version of the mechanisms you already use to create your physical reality experience. We give it to you in the simplest possible way so that it doesn't become overly complicated and so you don't have to overthink it. You can just apply it purely and simply for whatever you deem correct for you. It will change your life, guaranteed, if you apply it properly. Finding your passion. We know that in our conversations with many of you, you say, "Well, I don't know what my passion is." Nonsense. It's easy to find your passion. But when we say passion, we're not trying to conjure up images of some life-spanning career or some gigantic project. No, we mean to simply start something. You have the ability to determine which options before you are more exciting, for which you have more passion, attraction, or even curiosity than the other options in your life, even if it's just a little bit more than the other options. So start simply. If you don't have a big idea of what that means, start small. It will snowball into something bigger. For example, you are reading this book, we assume, because you thought this was the most exciting thing you could be doing in this particular moment. That wasn't hard to do. It wasn't a difficult decision. You just said, "Oh, yes, out of all the options I have, I'm going to do this because I'm more attracted to it right now." Once your reading is all over, look around. You could take a walk, read a different book, see a movie, talk to a friend, eat a meal, have a nap, whatever. By comparing your options, if any of them has even the tiniest bit more attractiveness or passion or excitement in it than any other option, simply do it next, to the best of your ability, following the formula. You never know where that's going to lead, and that's the whole point. It will always lead you to the next place you actually need to be, even if it seems totally disconnected, in ways you simply cannot comprehend. Let's say you're writing a book, and for some reason you feel you just can't go any further. The excitement has waned. The ideas aren't coming. You look around and think, "All right, well, what's the next most exciting thing I could do? I'd like to take a walk." So you take a walk. And while you're walking, you happen to overhear a conversation that is exactly what you needed to inspire you for the next chapter of your book. That's how it works when you let it. That's pure synchronicity, and that is the organizing principle of your life. It is one of the mechanisms that unfolds when you follow the formula. Synchronicity. Now, the final part of our review will look more closely at this mechanism and how it unfolds when you precisely apply our life's instruction manual and its 5 steps as diligently and often as possible. Synchronicity is always working. Everything's an orchestration. In truth, there are no accidents. You're always where you are through perfect synchronicity, and whether that's a positive or a negative synchronicity is up to you and your state of being. By negative synchronicity, we mean that if you are in a negative state, buying into negative fear-based beliefs, this will allow you to spiral downward, causing more and more negative circumstances to surround you. But there are 2 forms of positive synchronicity, what we refer to as red light synchronicity and green light synchronicity, that arise. For example, when an opportunity representative of your passion may present itself to you so that you are able to act on it. Sometimes there's something that looks like an opportunity, but when you do your best to act on it, you don't get anywhere. It's like banging into a brick wall. Now, unless this is caused by a negative belief system, it might be red light synchronicity simply saying, not right now. This may be representative of your path or representative of your passion, but this red light means it's not the next step to take right now. In which case, if you've examined yourself and you believe wholeheartedly and honestly that it is not a fear-based belief that's preventing you from moving down that path, but positive synchronicity in the red light sense that is saying not right now, then look for other things you can act on and move in that direction. That's your guiding mechanism again. These unexpected diversions actually increase the acceleration of your journey, finding your path of least resistance. There doesn't need to be struggle in your life. You don't need to exert that much effort. Yes, there are still challenges, but challenges are fun. There's no need to define them in a negative way. When you're following your passion, these accelerations add to the driving engine of your life and give you the energy to keep going. They move and motivate you. You can't wait to get up in the morning and keep going. This is what happens when you follow the formula of acting on your passion to the best you can. No insistence or assumption on the outcome. While you stay in a positive state no matter what happens, examining and letting go of your negative and fear-based beliefs. The organizing principle of synchronicity brings you exactly what you need to act on, when you need to act on it, in perfect timing. If it's not coming to you right now, it doesn't need to. Trust the way your life unfolds. Synchronicity will guide you. Any strain and negativity cease to be felt. You're flowing through life. You're following your unique current, a current that connects you to all other expressions of your excitement, so that when red light synchronicity says, no, not this, green light synchronicity says, over here, look at this. This is the next step for you to take. It also connects you to all the forms of support you need in your life for you to continue to act on your excitement. And when I say support, I don't just mean money. I understand that money is one of the symbols of abundance and support in your reality, on your planet, but it isn't the only one. When you insist that it has to be money or else you can't do what you need to do, you're actually closing the door to all the other forms of abundance that could allow you to move forward on your passion, your excitement, and your dream. Well, we will continue with this in the coming weeks. And as always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher program.